Now it's my pleasure to welcome Charlotte to Major League Soccer as our 30th team. And now your new owner, David Tepper.
Charlotte.
You ready to party?
Please join me in welcoming Charlotte Football Club's first head coach, Miguel Angel Ramirez.
Buenos dias.
In the 2022 MLS Super Draft, presented by Adidas, Charlotte FC selects from the University of Maryland and Generation Adidas, Ben Bender.
Oi, bienvenido, benvenuti, and welcome. It's match day, so that means another brilliant person on our podcast. This week, we have the pleasure of talking with color commentator for the Charlotte FC Radio English and British broadcast, Jessica Sharman. Jessica shares with us how she came to this position, her life growing up in England, her goalkeeper mindset, and her drive to be authentic and real. She also opens up about how she almost quit broadcasting and what and who inspired her to be where she is today. Jessica left the village of Harefield, England, outside London, to begin her playing career at Clayton State University in the States, where she earned several honors, including being nominated as NCAA Woman of the Year in 2018. Also, while earning her journalism degree there, she has been the voice of Peach Belt Conference Soccer Championships, Mercer University Soccer, as well as broadcasting for Atlanta United, too. Let's get to know Jess, the color commentator for Charlotte FC Radio.
It's a really difficult ball for Franco. He'll have wanted to hit the target, but as you see it again, it's on the half volley, a really difficult technique to have.
Bender playing it forward. To the right side is McKenzie. McKenzie Gaines has Svinarski with him. McKenzie with a shot. Save made for Yarbrough.
I'm sorry, McKenzie Gaines, but you've got to find the pass.
For a corner kick.
And he earned every high five from his teammates there. Christian Colina, a double save on the goal line. Swiderski's feet are impeccable. He's a big guy, but got ballerina tiptoes with the possession at his feet. His pullback very minimal, but still able to generate a rocket of a shot.
Swiderski gets it back! And that is justice!
Well, hello and welcome, Jessica Charman. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thanks, Nick, for having me. Delighted to be here to share what's an interesting story, even if I say so myself.
Oh, awesome. I'm so glad. Well, let's start with the story because you are in a unique position being a color commentator, not only for a new franchise, but also, you know, there's not many women who are soccer, football, color commentators on a professional level. So how did you get this position?
Well, it's really crazy when I think back to it. I found out about this position a couple of days into January this year. So it's been a wild, wild ride, very quick to come about. I believe there may have been someone else lined up before me and the ducks didn't fall in a row for them, but they ended up falling in a row for me. Got a phone call from Jason Longshore, who's the commentator on the radio over at Atlanta United. And he had been reached out about me because I was a name that was starting to get a little bit of gravity in this business. And he kind of put the feeler out there. He was like, how would you feel about heading over to Charlotte? And the minute I heard that, there was no doubt that I was going to say yes. It was kind of crazy to me that he was even wondering whether there was any doubts about it. But it's something I've wanted to do for a very long time. And I've been taking the steps towards it through college after graduation, and the hard work paid off. And it's funny that you mentioned, Nick, about the lack of female voices. That is something that is important to me now, because you've got to represent strong, and I want to normalize, you know, the voice of whoever's on there, as long as they've got the knowledge, as long as they've got the credibility, it's just the best person for the role, hopefully.
Right. Yeah, definitely. But we still also need to have your voice in there, because then people can't even imagine that that's even possible if they don't see people
that look like them. Yeah, it was totally part of that. So what prepared you for this in your career? I know you did some work for your college or for Mercer, and then also you did some work with Atlanta United, but what prepared you specifically for being this position?
So growing up, obviously watched soccer, played soccer, always late nights watching the breakdown shows, Match of the Day in England, and sort of thought, well, this is something I want to do. What a cool position it would be to talk about the beautiful game and get paid for it. So when I started, came over to America, played college soccer, was doing a journalism degree, and there was a gap. The men's soccer team didn't have a commentator. And so the SID of my university was like, well, we've heard that you are a journalism major, that you're interested in broadcasting. How would you feel about doing this? And I took the opportunity with both hands. Something that not many people know is that I also did basketball. So I did soccer and basketball for my college. I would play a collegiate match, go to the locker room, get ready, come out and do the women's game. Had to climb a ridiculous tower because at Clayton State University down in Georgia, they don't really have a press box. It's a ladder to a tower. Would climb that after the match, call the game. And I loved it. And it was something that I was good at, if I'm quite honest. So once I graduated, started to do some freelance work. You mentioned Mercer University. Did some at University Tennessee Chattanooga and UPSL. And basically, if anyone reached out to say, hey, can you commentate this game? I wouldn't even look at how far away it was. I would say yes and go ahead and drive across state lines to do it. And I'm a big believer in if you want something enough, you'll grind for it. And the grind has obviously paid off.
Yeah. And you just did something this week with the Georgia high schools.
Yeah. So GHSA, the High School Association, I'm still based just south of Atlanta, actually, right now, because obviously I found out about the job within a matter of weeks from starting. I wasn't able to relocate. But so they reached out. I'd done a couple of them before, and I love it. I think something that I'm really passionate about is it that developmental level. Obviously, MLS is the dream. You're calling matches at the highest possible level. But I think it's important not to forget the roots of where I came from. And when you get to do high school, when you get to do showcases, when in the summer I'll be doing USL2 rather for a team in Peachtree City, it's fun because you get to see that grassroots level. You get to see the people that maybe haven't made it yet, but have the potential. And that's one of the reasons I'm really excited for Charlotte FC to get the MLS Next Pro team, because that's just the next step in development to cultivate our own quality players away from the academy as well.
And also another group of people calling games, another group of people covering different matches and things like that. So you're building it at a second level. Now, you grew up in Northwest London near Reading, is that right?
Yeah, I was in Harefield. So my closest big soccer team, as I always like to do it around here, was Watford, which, I mean, it's not really a big team, but it's a team that people have heard of in their Premier League time. But I'm obviously a Reading fan. That's through my dad, about 45 minutes away from Reading.
So how did that family life growing up in the UK influence your career moves and your move to the States and kind of where you are now?
So I've got an older brother, and I'm a very hard-headed, determined woman. And I was that as a young girl as well. Whatever my brother did, I wanted to do. Unfortunately, my parents were super supportive of that. So started playing soccer when I was 4 or 5 years old. Would go along to my brother's club practices and have a kick about. Ended up becoming a goalkeeper. Everyone always asked why and how. A lot of goalkeepers over here don't specialize until they're later on. But I was a six-year-old that put their hand up to volunteer as tribute to be a goalkeeper. I think in my head, I knew that it was a way to get more game time than anyone else. I mean, when do you see a youth goalkeeper get subbed out? So a bit sneaky, but ended up being really good at it. I'm sort of in the cusp of my age, 27 years old. So in England, women's professional soccer, as I was growing up, wasn't as much of an attainable thing as it is now. A lot of my former teammates have now gone pro because they stayed back home. But when I was 16, 17, I sort of had a decision to make. It wasn't really going to be the professional level of getting a career that it could be full time. So I watched the movie Bend It Like Beckham. Everyone's probably seen Bend It Like Beckham that's into soccer, and it opened my eyes to the college scholarship. And Started reaching out to coaches, started having my dad film every match that I was playing. I was playing for the Watford Academy and then the Reading women's first team at the time. And then got some scholarship offers. So was able to come over to the United States, have my education paid for, play collegiately, which is the closest thing you can get to professional with training every day, playing twice a week during season. And yeah, it was a brilliant story and I'm glad I got to do it. But I always point out like that competitiveness with my brother is really what got me to where I am and wanting to be better than him, quite honestly.
Well, you know, goalkeepers, you know, they kind of get up there in years. You got a lot of time left. I mean, you could go back, right? Still training. I hear about you scoring like 16 goals a match, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those where I miss it a lot at times. I found this new career path that I love, but, you know, you're right. It's not something that I would write off. I still play in some adult leagues and I want to go down and practice. Every time I talk to Christian Kleiner or Jorgs Marks, they're always telling me to come down for a training session. So I'll have to dust off the gloves and come out of retirement sometime pretty soon, I think.
So what do you miss most about living in the UK?
My family. What a lot of people don't realize when you talk about moving is it wasn't like I moved here with my family. I was 18 years old, got on a plane, moved to just south of Atlanta. And it's a different world. It forces you to grow up a lot quicker than maybe other people do. I always felt like I had that old soul because you're forced to have that independence. You're forced to learn to fend for yourself. And my parents have been very supportive and it makes you realize as you get older what a sacrifice they made too. Everyone always says, oh, you were so brave for moving across and setting up your life over here. But, you know, my parents let their 18-year-old daughter, their baby, come to a completely different country, an 8-9 hour flight away. And they were always supportive. And as much as I know it hurt them at times, they never showed that to me. You know, they never made me feel guilty for making this decision. And I'll tell you, when I got on the plane in 2013, I'm not sure, nearly 10 years later, they expected me to still be here. Maybe they wouldn't have let me fly if they had known that it would end up being a bit more than just a 4-year collegiate experience.
Right, right. Yeah, definitely. I have a child that's about to go away to New York City to college. And it's like, you know, will they ever come back type thing? I know that's only, you know, just a little
no,
bit.
No, but it's hard as a parent. And, you know, you take for granted. When I look back, I don't think I realized how quick that time goes with your family. So definitely miss them the most. But they're flying out. They're actually on an airplane right now as we're talking to come visit. So they'll be at the Charlotte FC match this weekend. So very excited.
Oh, fabulous. You're going to be awesome. You're going to be glowing just because you have all that energy from them coming. So speaking about that role, so you're the color commentator for Charlotte FC, and do you work for Charlotte FC or do you technically work for WFNZ?
Like how? So technically it's WFNZ, which I'm a very honest commentator and that's something I pride myself in. I'm honest, I break it down. I'm going to be real about the situation, but at the same time, of course, we're coming from a homer perspective because we love this club too. I've already fallen in love with Charlotte FC. And you mentioned, Nick, about how it's a special thing because we're the first voices of this club. And that helps in a lot of ways because I'm able to fall in love with this side from day one instead of having to sort of jump ship into a team that's already got a history. I'm able to experience it with everybody. So we work very closely with the club. Obviously, we have a good relationship with the players. We're always interviewing them. We work directly with them, but WFNZ is technically my employer. And I love that because it does give you that level of independence as well mm-hmm. as being related with the club.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And also you get to shape what we think about as soccer here, which is, I think it's just awesome. I love being at the start of things and being able to be like, oh, I'm creating this and I'm making this into whatever it is. So
definitely. And I'm able to find that balance because there's a lot of people that are new to soccer. So you want to educate without being condescending. But then there's so many people in the Carolinas that have loved this sport for longer than they can remember, for longer probably than I've been alive. So finding that balance between educating, inspiring, shaping stories without being condescending is like a really special dynamic to be able to find.
And showing how fun it is. I mean, you have fun up there.
it's a world of good. And I have to shout Willie out. Willie P. I never pronounce his last name because fun fact, it's really difficult to do. So I just call him Willie P all the time. He's really brings the energy and he has been around with Charlotte FC since the club was announced pretty much and right. has really when I say that I support the club and I want us to do well, I do, but Will takes it to another level and I can feed off his energy and excitement. And he makes it very easy to call a game with, because for those that aren't used to soccer and may think it's a boring sport, he will bring the energy and then I can feed off it. And it creates a really good dynamic between the two of us.
Do you have any mentors that have influenced you, even going back to before you even doing this? Like, what is?
Yeah, so I talked about Jason Longshore, who's the voice of Atlanta United. And I know there's that rivalry brewing between Atlanta United and Charlotte FC, which is always fun. But on the media side, he's been a brilliant mentor. Someone that's really taken me under his wing while I was in college, would help me get opportunities with him. We called a lot of games at the collegiate level. And then it was him that reached out to me for my first Atlanta United 2 matches when I was covering them in USL Championship. He was the one that hooked me up with that. And that's why I think it's so special that he was the one that was able to tell me about this opportunity. And then I would also point to Jackie Oatley, who is one of the first female voices that we're hearing now. I believe she's on NBC now at times covering matches in the Premier League, but she was on Match of the Day in England, one of the first female voices that I was able to hear. Unfortunately, didn't start hearing her until I was in college, because again, you mentioned how important it is to have that visibility. I didn't have female voices. I didn't. Luckily, I was stubborn enough to think that it didn't matter that I couldn't hear those voices, that I could be a voice. But it's exciting now that people growing up will be able to hear a female voice and it will be more normalized. But Jackie wrote me a letter while I was in college. I had a friend that worked at the BBC that told her a little bit about my story. She wrote me a letter. And I've not told anyone much about this story because it actually makes me a bit emotional. But I had given up almost on the commentating stuff once I was a year out of college. I got a real full-time job. I was still involved in soccer, working at a nonprofit, but you know, I was swamped with that day to day commuting to Atlanta, a lot of stress, and I'd sort of given up on the commentary. And then I was cleaning up my basement and I found a letter from her, and the letter said, you know, you've got a lot of potential. You need to work for it. You need to say yes to opportunities. When I found that letter the next day, I texted Jason. I was like, what can I do? Can I get a match soon? And I truly believe if I hadn't found that letter that I would never have been in this position. So I still have contact with Jackie and I tell her, Whenever I got this gig, I was like, it's truly because of you that I was able to carry on doing this and to restart that passion. So she would be probably the number one, and Jason obviously as well.
That's a great story. It's good. It's so nice to have people that really care and that can just know how to push the buttons or lead you where you need to go to next.
And then you learn from them, and it has to be a circle, right? It's a development, because they have treated me like that. One of the things that I will always do is anyone that direct messages me asking for help, anyone that asks whether I can spend time talking to them about what I did, colleges will reach out and ask if I can talk to classes. It doesn't matter how busy I am. I'm always going to find time because I want other students to feel empowered and repay. You know, it's about giving back and paying it forward. And I was grateful enough to have people do that for me. So I know that I want to be able to create opportunities for other people.
Nice. So how do you prepare? Like, what is your process for like an upcoming match? What are you doing in the background? I know we'll talk about your podcast that you do midweek, but like, what are you doing to get you ready so that you are full game?
Dream job. I get to watch soccer matches. So I use my ESPN Plus membership very, very wisely. I'll go back. I'll watch usually the most recent 2 matches or so of the opponent. I'll go into the highlights, watch YouTube videos, that kind of thing. Something I do that I don't think as many people do in this business is I like to listen to opposition fan podcasts. I think it's a really unique way to get a bigger picture story. Obviously, you hear professionals, you hear pundits, but you're not going to hear about the environment, how the fans are feeling, what their takes are. And I have a 4-hour drive up from where I live to Charlotte. So a lot of time I'll pop the headphones in on the journey, listen to opposition podcasts, get that unique twist. And then in terms of my research boards, I create a big A3 sheet of paper and I write every player on a post-it note. The reason I use post-it notes is because you never know what you're going to get in terms of starting lineups. It's flexible, but just really make sure you're prepared. And what's crazy is you will do all this research and out of 3-4 hours of research, you might use 4 or 5 nuggets of actual information that you find, which at first I had to get used to it. I was like, damn, this sucks. But what you don't realize is those hours that you put in on the opposition, on your own team, give you that big picture context and confidence to talk about things more generally, even if you're not getting in your fun facts about this player that once, you know, saved a penalty in a World Cup match or whatever.
Right. The opportunity has to present itself, but if it is, you're ready. Like that's what the whole preparation for is waiting for that, because you don't control the game, of course.
No, and you always want to be ready. And soccer's an unpredictable sport. All sports are unpredictable. And you can't script this stuff. You can't. And sometimes you wish you could, because you wanted to say something that you thought would be really cool. But if you do that, people will see through you. And I'm very big about being authentic and genuine and speaking in the moment. And I think that's part of my style, is being a bit unpredictable myself and what you might hear me say.
So how early do you get there on match day to prep?
3-4 hours, which sounds, you know, a little crazy. Not as many people I know do that. But for me, I like to be relaxed. I like to be chill. And Charlotte traffic is unpredictable. You can be 1 mile away and it could take you 30, 40 minutes to get there. The spread at Bank of America on home days is pretty good. They've got some good food. So I like to sit down. I like to mingle. I'm a bit of a social butterfly in that. I'll say hello to everybody, and it'll take you a while to say hello to everyone in the media, whether it's podcast creators, Charlotte FC staff. But again, that's my mantra. That's one of the things I pride myself in. Say hello to everyone, be a friendly face, be a friendly, approachable presence, because making friends can only ever be a good thing. And then about an hour and a half before, I'll shut myself in the booth alongside Willie and really get down to things and focus more specifically. But a lot of what I do on match day is just socializing. Again, if you're comfortable, you're going to have a very comfortable call. And, you know, the first ever match, I was stressed. I was nervous. And once that went well, now I just go and have fun, because the most important thing is you're having fun, because that will then transpire to what you're calling, and the audience will have fun as well.
Right. Don't you wish they had video of you every time you called stuff? Because you guys move around a lot, don't you?
We've tiddled with putting in a GoPro at some point. You're probably more likely to catch Willie running into me or invading my personal space. It's all love, but that guy likes to get around there. But it's fun, and we're definitely going to do more of that. And our producer, Matt, behind the scenes, is very good at reacting and getting the goal calls, because it's one of those where it's kind of like singing. Like, you watch singers, and when they use their body, when they gesticulate, you can feel the mood and the tempo more. So I am not a sit down commentator. I stand up, and honestly, on a Sunday after a Saturday match, my body is sore, like I've been to the gym, just from standing on your feet so long and moving around and shifting and shimmying. And it's a physically and mentally exhausting gig, honestly.
Yeah, I've heard. So, you have your other gig, which is the podcast with Will, and that's on Wednesdays. Tell me what you like about that, opposed to just the other stuff.
I love that it's an opportunity to reflect. A lot of what I do is within split seconds of the live action, right? So it's very instant, reactionary, not enough time to process maybe the big, you know, the bigger storylines, the bigger pictures. So the podcast allows me a couple of days to sleep on stuff, to watch it back, to check the angles and come up with some different talking points to maybe what I focused on in the post-match show. It's also a great opportunity. I love to talk to the supporters in that segment we do. Obviously, my favorite is the player spotlight. It's still surreal at times that I have such close access to the players, that they get to know me and we get to have fun with them. And they've been brilliant. They've been really patient with us. They've been willing to answer any questions we have. And once you start building those relationships as well, and when we're down at the pitch, like at the Open Cup match that we weren't able to get to, I was able to say hello to the players and they knew who I was. And that, again, is like a bit of a surreal moment. I have to remind myself, like, this is my job now. But that's really fun in the podcast. But I think the biggest thing is being able to process my thoughts in a slower manner and be able to really think through my reflections instead of it being instantaneous. So you get very different claims sometimes.
And you get to be opinionated, whereas you probably, well, even though you probably don't hold back too much.
I,
you
can, I, Will sometimes gives me a look, and he'll admit it. There's the look. And when Will gives me the look, it's like, hey, Jess, it's time to calm down a little bit. You're getting a little too passionate right now. But on the podcast, we get to be more fun. And I love the interactive component as well. If there's one thing that maybe we wish to introduce more into the radio broadcast in the future, it's a bit more of interaction with those that are listening. Try and do a lot of that on Twitter. But on the podcast, it's free reigning. And anyone that joins us on the podcast can throw their comments, throw their banter. And we have a lot of back and forth. So I love that interaction as well.
Yeah. I love that you're asking people ahead of time, like, you know, what questions do you have? What do you want us to talk about? I think that's an important part of it. All right. So you are a goalkeeper, and I feel like a goalkeeper, you know, you get action, but it's like in spurts, and you see the big picture. You have to anticipate, you have to communicate, like that's happening all the time. Do you feel like being a goalkeeper has really prepared you for being this commentary? Because I feel like goalkeepers just commentate the whole time. I played center back. Uh-huh. And my goalie was talking either to me or to himself half the time. I'm like, what are you saying? You know, sometimes it's yelling things, but other times he was just, you know, always commenting on what's going on. So I imagine
that's a fantastic parallel that I actually haven't talked about before. But the more you put it into place, 100%, the fact I'm a goalkeeper has helped me be where I am today. I was an extremely, extremely vocal goalkeeper, whether it be yelling at my center backs, organizing, positioning, but even when the ball was up the other end of the pitch, like you say, almost talking through what they're doing. Hey, cross, look back, post, all of this stuff. And I think the viewpoint of a goalkeeper as well, we always talk about the unique positioning of a goalkeeper and how it means they can see everything on the pitch. So my entire life of playing, I always had that perspective of seeing big picture, of seeing formation, of seeing breakdown. The other special thing about being a goalkeeper is I have a knowledge base that very few other commentators have. You know, right. Everyone will try and talk about goalkeeping. Everyone will try and break down the angles or, oh, he shouldn't have got beaten near post. But unless you've been in those situations, you cannot accurately say what is a goalkeeping mistake, what should have done better there, or why was he beaten at the near post. And I'm able to really offer that feedback and criticism. And people will say, oh, well, you probably always say the goalkeeper's right, but I don't. I'm always able to say, hey, why was this a good save? Or why was this a poor goal to concede? So I think that's a really good knowledge base. And unfortunately, there's a lot of commentators out there that try and be goalkeeping experts when they're not.
Perspective. Yeah. Yeah. Do you have like a little Jedi mind trick thing with like Kalina? Like, do you know just by looking at him, like, yep, that's what I'm thinking too?
I think with his positioning, I know ahead of time whether he's coming for something or how he's feeling afterwards. You're able to gauge his body language. You're able to gauge when he's feeling himself, when he's not. And I think he's just been brilliant. And I was really wanting us to have a good goalkeeper because obviously you want to be able to talk positively about them. And he's impressed me tenfold. And even George Marks, who I had the opportunity to talk to on Wednesday as well, has really stepped up. And I love that variety between the rookie and, you know, the more experienced guy in Kalina. And it's a strong goalkeeper union with four really good goalkeepers. So I cannot complain about that.
All right. I got a couple more questions before we do our stoppage time in the last minute. So if Miguel asked you to step into the starting 11, where would your skills best be suited?
The footwork, which I've developed a lot from playing on the pitch. You mentioned how, you know, I enjoy being on the pitch, trying to be a forward, scoring goals. Well, that was something that was started during my college days because my coach wanted me to improve my feet. He was very much a Miguel, wanting the goalkeeper to be very comfortable in possession. He said, go play adult league, you know, in the off season, in summer. Hey, go play on the pitch. And I did that and I loved it. And so my confidence with the ball at my feet, my distribution, my ability to ping a ball in a certain way, but also find those penetrating passes. And then a lot of people know I was called Mad Cat because I'm psycho and love a good one-on-one and diving at the feet of a player. So the nature of this model is that you're going to see a lot of one-on-ones. How many times has Christian Kalina come out big in those one-on-ones? And that's something that I love doing. That's an adrenaline rush to me, just thinking about throwing myself in front of the ball. So that would be something that I would thrive on in this system.
Awesome. All right. And then as we see more women in your role, what would you like to share for those interested in doing what you do?
Say yes to everything. I hate to be the person that says sometimes you're going to have to do free or cheap work, but in this nature, it's true. You're not, you know, a lot of the small colleges aren't going to have the big budget to pay you the big bucks, but if they're willing to pay you something for your time, if they're willing to make it somewhat worthwhile, then say yes, because it's all about reps, whether it's reps at high school level, reps at local club level. Reach out to people, ask if you can just come and talk through it. It sounds silly, but sometimes you just got to turn the TV remote down on watching a game and talk through how you would say it. So getting the reps, but also never be afraid to reach out to people. The majority of people in this business are very, very nice and sociable because they've had to struggle through things as well. So reach out to people, find a mentor, find that person that's going to take you under their wing and, you know, utilize them, be respectful of their time, not, you know, nag, but find the person that you can relate to and offer you feedback, because having someone that's willing to listen through your stuff and show you the ropes has been really vital for me.
Awesome. All right. So this last part we call stoppage time. It's like six quick questions. So just kind of top of your head.
It's stoppage time.
Do you have a favorite personal ritual?
You even sent me these. Favorite personal ritual? No, I mean, I don't really.
Nothing that you just do. Well, you play all the time. Like you don't do anything. Like even as goalkeeper, most goalkeepers are super real ritualistic. Like,
Okay. So like, we're talking playing. Okay.
Is there something
in college? I would put my gloves on, and it's so disgusting now I think about it. But you spit in each glove, and then I would jump up and touch the crossbar. Yeah, so it was like a double spit, rubbed together, touched the crossbar. And then what's crazy is I would go and high five all my teammates with spit on my hands.
Oh, fabulous.
Filthy. Right. That wouldn't be allowed in the COVID era.
Yeah, no, not at all. Favorite unplugged activity?
Going to the gym, like exercising, love like boot camp style workouts or spin bike workouts.
Oh, nice. All right, go-to snack?
Anything salty, really big salty fan. I love French fries, which is ironic. That's why I do the exercise, because I love French fries so much. Been in America too long.
What design impresses you more, interior or exterior? And it doesn't have to be buildings, just in everything.
I want to say interior because you're not meant to judge a book by its cover, but I'm all about exterior. When I look at houses, like I don't even think about how it looks on the inside if it looks beautiful from the outside.
All right. Do you find starting a project or finishing more gratifying?
Finishing. I'm a list, check off the list, get it done sort of person.
End of the match. Woohoo. Yes.
On to the next one. 30 to go.
Right. All right. Last one. What recharges you?
Spending time with my family, whether it be on Zoom, you know, FaceTime, all of those things. Really important to stay in touch at all times.
All right. Well, thanks for being on. Appreciate it. I enjoyed talking to you.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Nick.
Fantastic time with Jessica. To me, success or magic happens when one is prepared for opportunities that arise and also meets a little bit of luck. Jessica Charman has definitely done that. Her goalkeeper mindset really makes her an outstanding commentator, along with years of playing and watching matches. Representing and normalizing women as broadcasters in MLS and other sports is so important. I'm so glad Charlotte FC has Jessica. Can't wait to see how her broadcasting career takes off from here. Don't forget to tune in to Jess and Will as they broadcast each match across the Charlotte FC radio network from the flagship station WFNZ, 610 AM, 92.7 FM. You can follow Jess on Twitter at JessTalksFooty and listen to her break down the match and tell you what she really thinks Wednesdays on the Crown Corner podcast. Thanks for listening. Charlotte FC Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Nick Finelli. Please do us a favor and share this podcast with a friend or give us a 5-star review. This helps others find our podcast.